Nick, I have so much I want to ask you about, and I think I want to start with Wicklow Brave, and just, because I don't want to end on and save it and end it on a sad note, but it was so tough on Saturday. I was so looking forward to seeing him, and to have it, you know, to have it be a goodbye like that is just seemed so unfair.
Just a huge shame, and such a super horse, such a versatile horse as well, and really, but for his incredible versatility and all that he'd done in his career, he wouldn't have been at the American Grand National at Fire Hill. So it's a testament to what he'd done that he was even considered the sort of horse that could go there, and the fact that he was running such a bold race only seems to make it more sad, really. And there's not much more you can say than to just express what a great career he's had, how brilliantly trained he's been, and to commiserate with the people who were closest to him and who'd been through an amazing, amazing journey with him. And he'd given an awful lot of people an awful lot of pleasure, and it just would have been so much better all round had his career ended in a different way. But sadly, as we've talked about a lot this year, there is a part of the sport that is open to that sort of risk, and obviously in a national hunt race, in a jumps race, in a steeplechase, that risk is that little bit greater, and it's something that we all subscribe to because we love the sport and we recognise how much these horses contribute, and we recognise how much the people who look after them contribute to the sport and to the well-being of all horses. So it's something that occasionally we have to deal with, not something that's ever pleasant. We've talked about much more systemic and institutional wrongs in the game this year. This, I don't think, belongs in that category. I think this just belongs in the category of very unfortunate accident that has befallen a very, very special and very versatile horse. And he was terrific, really. A horse who could win admittedly an all-age classic horse race at the Irish St. Ledger, having won a race at the Cheltenham Festival. Having, I think the race he won at the Cheltenham Festival, he'd refused to race only 3 or 4 days earlier. He was quirky, no doubt, and a character, but he was a tremendous, tremendous horse. And you won't see many like him.
The list of, you know, international gatherings that he attended, I can't think of a horse that ever did what he did, including running in Melbourne Cups at Cheltenham, at Royal Ascot, at the Ebor Festival, at Galway, at Punchestown Festival. They've got a list. Irish Champions Weekend, Goodwood. It's unbelievable.
Well, he one of those classic horses that was good enough that he could take you to all the big shows, but not so good that he couldn't give you a lot of fun at the same time. it's a perfect horse to own, really. And I know Nick Peacock a little bit, who owned him and has had a number of really good horses with Willie Mullins, Gary Bohr, and others. And he's a great enthusiast for the sport, and it's a big loss for him. But he's a horse who's given a lot of pleasure.
Well, everybody should pull up one of the pieces. Somebody just sent me a blog entry, this piece at thoroughbredracing.com, which Nick contributes to. Watch a video of there's a several video compendiums of him in competition. It really obviously ruined what was hours earlier had become a special day for Willie Mullins getting his first win in the United States, and certainly felt like he was going to be poised for, you know, for a sweep with two horses, two wonderful horses, and that mare looks like, you know, she's going to go on to very big things. We shouldn't let it spoil Nicky Henderson's win as well, though, because Brain Power, you know, he was coming together. They were coming together for what would have been an epic duel up the hill to the wire, Nick. And Brain Power looks like he's got a lot of upside. And Nico de Boinville caught my attention last week with his tweeting, and it looks like he's a talent.
Oh, Nico de Boinville is a very good talent and has established himself now as the go-to jockey for Nicky Henderson, who is the predominant, or one of the predominant, national hunt steeplechase trainers in in the UK. He and his great rival Paul Nicholls have been dueling for the trainer's title the last few years. Henderson now in his fourth decade with a license, but seems to just get more and more dominant. There's no man in the UK who's trained more Cheltenham Festival winners than him. And he has got a good horse on his hands in Brain Power. We've always known that. He's always been massively talented. But sometimes has chucked in a clunker, and oftentimes he's chucked in a clunker around Cheltenham where it's mattered most. He does, however, have oodles of ability. And I think my view was that he was just getting the better of the argument when Brain Power fell. But I think it would have been a terrific finish between the two of them. And certainly Brain Power was a worthy winner of a race of that nature. And there's a bit of interesting historical sync here, because he runs in the colours of Michael Buckley, the man who owned Toast of New York when that horse nearly pulled off that insane fairy tale victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic in 2014, and has been fabled for those exploits ever since. Initially, you know, Michael more well known for his ownership of jumpers, and have had some very good ones. And indeed, I think it was in his very early days as an owner back in the 1970s, when he was probably in his late 20s, early 30s, that he had two runners in the Grand National. And then he flew to, I'm pretty sure, the Colonial Cup, where he saw his horse win, and then flew to Vegas to watch Elvis perform. And he always tells me about that weekend of all weekends. So I was reminded of that when Brain Power won the American Grand National. There's a neat little bit of historical sync there.
Well, it is always supposed to be the highlight of the chase season for us here, and it was overall a wonderful day, but certainly marred by the way things turned out. Everybody soldiers forth. Meanwhile, earlier in the day, Saturday, Nick, it was, as always, a British Champions Day that produced no shortage of drama, and the ramifications are, you know, very clear moving toward Breeders' Cup. Let's talk about Saturday morning.
Saturday was a day that potentially could have been a rather damp squib, given the weather conditions in the last 2 weeks in England, and the executive at Ascot had to take special measures, as I'm sure everyone knows and has read and has seen, two or three days before the race to move the round course races, so the filly and mare's race, the long distance race, and the British Champion Stakes itself, onto what would normally be the hurdles track on the inside of the main flat course, which rendered the straight even shorter and the bends a little sharper, though they did make amends to try and realign that. As things stood, the track seemed to ride really quite well. I didn't hear any complaints. And it's fantastic that Ascot and British Champions Series had that contingency in place and thought of that contingency two or three years ago, because but for that contingency, those races wouldn't have been able to take place, because the existing course essentially was unraceable, well, completely unraceable. And in fact, the inner course, which they did use, was an awful lot softer, I think, than people thought it might be. So we were lucky to get the races on, but we got the races on. The day wasn't too bad itself weather-wise, and we got some terrific performances. So all was well that ended well, and I think in Magical, the winner of the British Champions Stakes, a filly that everybody's familiar with, whichever side of the Atlantic you happen to be on, we had the right winner, because I think it's fair to say it wasn't the deepest British Champions Stakes there's ever been. We were missing two or three of Europe's best horses, either through retirement or their season had finished. So given the lineup that we had, I think it was entirely appropriate that we had a genuine Group 1 multiple participant beating an upwardly mobile horse who has always shown his best on soft ground. So it was a result that meant something, and Magical may well now come to Breeders' Cup if Connections think she's okay to do so.
And it seems to me, based on the reaction of Aidan O'Brien, Nick, that he's as impressed and sort of awe-inspired by her as anybody.
Yes, although we're all awe-inspired by the combination of being by Galileo and trained by Aidan O'Brien, that seems to elicit this incredible toughness in horses, be they colts or fillies, or in the very occasional cases regard to Ballydoyle horse or Gelding. they do seem to be able to run through a brick wall. And he can keep piling the work in and keep piling the runs in, and they just keep getting better and better. Now, obviously, this doesn't apply to every horse, and obviously, he's at an advantage because he has numbers, and not only does he has numbers in terms of quality as well. But it is remarkable to get one filly to, you know, run 8 or 9 times, 10 times through a season, all in Group 1 races, and get them to hold that form and, I dare say, improve it, let alone 3 or 4 that he's done in the last few years. When Found twice ran in that triptych of races at the end of the season, the Arc, the Champion Stakes, and the Breeders' Cup, and she did it 2 years on the spin and got an Arc and a Breeders' Cup out of it, you thought, well, you're not going to find too many more like that. Well, in Magical, you've got another one that might just do the same, and has already finished second to Enable in a Breeders' Cup, having won a race on British Champions Day the previous year. So it's pretty incredible, really. They're not going to go down amongst the all-time greats on numbers, but in terms of constitution and ability to do things that other horses perhaps haven't been considered capable of doing, you stick them right up there.
We understand, to round out the participants in that Champion Stakes that may have had interest or had been thought to have interest to come for Cup, Deidre. And now it seems like she'll go in a different direction.
Yeah, I think Connections were thinking of coming to California, but I think they believe that she's done enough for the time being. And I think that's fair enough. She's had a busy and ambitious campaign, and I think they thought it was either going to be the Arc or the Champions League or a race at the Breeders' Cup. It's a shame in a way, because I thought that a mile and a half, if they'd wanted to go that way against the boys in the Breeders' Cup turf, I think she could have won that, the way things are shaping up. And she likes fast ground, she likes good pace to run at, and I think she could have gone pretty close to that, because Aidan O'Brien said the other day that if Magical comes to the Breeders' Cup, the likelihood is she'll run an affiliate mare's race against Sister Charlie to leave Anthony Van Dyke to run in the turf race. It's an interesting call. But unfortunately for them, Anthony Van Dyke is not a female, so he doesn't have the option. He can only go in one of those races. So I guess that's the way that they'll have to play. And obviously, in Sister Charlie, Magical is facing the most formidable turf opponent of the two races, unless Bricks and Mortar runs in the mile and a half race.
Well, it actually, particularly when you look at the way the things are lining up, with Bricks and Mortar seemingly headed to the turf, the presence of Anthony Van Dyke, and Old Persian should be in the discussion. The North American players seem, just okay. They don't seem formidable against those top three. But Sister Charlie knocking heads with Magical, I mean, that becomes that becomes a nice confrontation.
That almost becomes the clash, doesn't it? That becomes the clash of the meet, I guess. Yes, I hear you. But the turf clash of the meet, I should say.
Yes.
I mean, the dirt mile and the sprint are both looking like super races, aren't they?
Yes.
But the turf clash of the meet, I think, becomes Chad Brown and Aidan O'Brien, doesn't it? Straight head to head between the two dominant forces either side of the pond.
Well, and that begs the question too about Fleeting, right? Aidan's got to make a decision there. And where has Gosden come out? Let's talk about the filly and mare stake and Starcatcher's win.
Yeah, I don't think there's a. Or hadn't hitherto been a plan to bring her to California. Obviously, the pre-entries come out Wednesday, and things can change. The last list that I saw suggested that the filly that Gosden might bring for the filly and mare turf is the filly that won the Pride Stakes at Newmarket on Future Champions Weekend, Fanny Logan, who's won her last four and is rapidly improving, and she looks at so she might be the one. I mean, as things stand on numbers, she's about the 7th best filly in Gosden's own yard, behind Enable and Starcatcher and Annapurna and Medea and Coronet and all the other ones I've forgotten. But they'd all be rated higher than Fanny Logan, but she's on the upgrade. And if he wants to chuck one in that race, I suppose it might be her. I don't know. I don't see any others. I'm quite disappointed in the sense that Medea didn't have the Breeders' Cup as a target. I thought that, again, I thought the meet would have worked out really well for her. She was a bit overmatched in the Champions Stakes. It just wasn't the right race for her, I didn't think, on that ground against Colts, and I thought the sort of a filly and mare turf would have suited her down to the ground, but there we go.
Now, the other names, and since we're on the filly and mare turf, the other names that we know particularly, and I brought them up with Dave Grenig on Friday, Castle Lady, who I think is coming out of the effort at Keeneland, seems very serious. Is Pia Brandt coming with Silva?
On the list, I think it was down as a possibility, but we're at that time, aren't we, where people have sort of declared their hand, and we're not quite sure how it's going to pan out this week. So pass, I think, is the honest answer.
And Iridessa, I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard any Iridessa news.
I don't see any reason why she wouldn't come. Joseph O'Brien likes the fixture. She's had a good preparation for it. I think the race looks tailor-made for her. She's genuine Group 1 filly on her day. She's not that consistent, but if she gets her conditions, then she's certainly worth her place in the lineup.
Is she more inclined, do you think, for the mile and a quarter, or is the mile, I mean, because she feels like one that could go either way?
She could go either. Won the Matron over a mile in Ireland, and they went a decent gallop in that race and seemed to suit her. My instinct would be that she'd be better suited to the mile and a quarter, and she might get a bit outpaced over the mile. But I think they could go either way.
Well, and you know, we should mention the other two events that were prominent on the card, and I think had interest by North American players, and that included the Sprint Stakes. Don Juan Triumphant over One Master, and then you had that terrific throwdown, Kew Gardens and Stradivarius in the Distance Cup. That was great.
Well, we'll take them in the order that you've introduced them, Steve, because I want to talk a bit more about the second race. But Don Juan Triumphant was a deserving winner. He's off to stud now. He was ground contingent through his career, and a stiff six furlongs, the stiffest imaginable six furlongs, really suited him. First Group 1 winner for King Power, important success for them. The chairman sadly lost his life last year in that awful accident.
Yes.
And his son has taken on the running of King Power Racing and seems to be equally enthusiastic. So hopefully that is an endeavour that will continue, because they're very important to horse racing in the UK at the moment. And as I say, a first winner at the top level for them. And an important comeback success for Sylvester D'Souza, who'd spent significant portion of the season out through injury and had been many times in the past crown champion jockey on that day, not so this time round. So it was nice to see him winning. As for the long distance race, that was one of the races of the season for me. I mean, I rather provocatively said on social media it was the race of the season, which I knew would get people going. But I just loved the way they went about it, those two. And sometimes, we've talked about it before, sometimes great horses can be as informed as much by their defeats as they are by their victories. Sorry if I sound like a broken record, but I think that was the case in Stradivarius this time. And he's just bumped into a horse, a sort of fresh horse, if you like. His owner said at the beginning of the season, the three stayers they were worried about were the Melbourne Cup winner Cross Counter, the Derby runner-up DXB, and the Ledger winner Kew Gardens. Well, he'd seen off Cross Counter and DXB multiple times, Stradivarius. He'd won his second £1 million stayers bonus, and then he's bumped into a horse who's only had a few runs this season and has come there fresh. And he's a very high-class animal, Kew Gardens, and roll on the rematch if they both turn up in the Gold Cup at Ascot next year.
Now, it's always an entertaining day. I didn't mention the Queen Elizabeth, I suppose, should be slipped in as well.
Yeah, very much. I think he's an exciting colt, King of Change. Now, I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's completely impossible that he could get a Breeders' Cup entry. As I say, I'm not saying it's likely, but I don't think it's completely impossible. They just have a look and see. I think the ground would be a little quick for him, ideally, in California, if they did decide to. And they might feel that they've got a nice horse for next year and they don't want to fire all their bullets now. He's a very, very smart horse. He's unexposed. He's only had a handful of runs. He missed the bulk of the season after he finished second in the Guineas. They brought him back quietly. Yeah, like him a lot. He'd not always need the ground as deep as he had it on Saturday, but it was certainly no disadvantage to him. And Richard Hannah's been really patient with him. a big frame of a horse. I think he'd be a much better four-year-old. They got quite a lot to look forward to. He was much the best in a pretty competitive field.
Interesting. There were some also rants, too, that probably we should bring up. And I suppose that David O'Meara, Lord Glitters, what do they go forward off of that?
Well, he's still there in the intended possibles, if that's not an oxymoron. He's still there, Lord Glitters, and so is Swedwar, who ran such a fine race at Keeneland last time. I would have thought Swedwar will come, whether they're prepared to roll the dice with Lord Glitters after running a slightly dull race on ground that I thought would be ideal for him. I don't know.
Interesting. And I guess while we're talking the mile broad strokes, Charlie Appleby with Line of Duty?
Yeah, I'm just worried that he's not quite quick enough for a Breeders' Cup mile. I know he won the juvenile race, and he's a talented enough horse, but he's quirky as well and a bit lazy. And I just think, I just worry about him having the necessary tactical speed, even though he ran well in France on his comeback. For a Breeders' Cup mile, but Charlie Appleby's Breeders' Cup record is very good.
Well, and I mean, the Godolphin, I don't know did I bring this up with you when we talked 3 weeks ago or so? The run that Godolphin is on is astounding. I mean, they're winning everywhere with every kind of horse. It's insane.
I mean, the most encouraging thing about their run globally at the moment is the run they're having with the 2-year-olds. I mean, that's really the thing, isn't it? The two exceptional horses by Chamadel, trained by André Farbe, and one exceptional horse trained by Chamadel, trained by Charlie Appleby. And then you've got Maxfield for Brendan Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
The horse of Saeed Bin Tarouz, who won the Autumn Stakes at Newmarket, I absolutely love. Military March. I think he's a genuine Derby horse for next year, called by New Approach. They've got a lot of really, really smart 2-year-olds. I think that'll be what's pleasing them the most.
Well, and since you mentioned the juveniles, and before I let you sing the praises of the fascinating set of interviews that you've done for Breeders' Cup fans and everybody to get them their appetites wetted for the week ahead, the 2 weeks ahead. Regarding the juveniles, we're waiting for several decisions, Aidan O'Brien in particular. And to be honest, the way some of the fields, Nick, have narrowed, notably the dirt races, the juvenile dirt races, the juvenile turf races are going to be wildly entertaining, including the juvenile turf sprint, which frankly is mostly North Americans. We're waiting for a couple of decisions on that front. Simon Crisford, notably.
Yeah.
But how about a quick overview of the 2-year-olds that are coming?
Well, I'm hoping Ali is coming for Simon Crisford. I've always assumed he was coming, and he's coming here in form. I thought that would be the way forward, unless he's showing signs of having gone over the top and having had enough for the season. I can't see any reason why he wouldn't. It's been his target from so far out. So he'd be the one that I'd be hopeful for in the juvenile sprint, though I'm sure Aidan will chuck a couple of horses in there. And then the long races, the long 2-year-old races. Again, you don't really know which horses are in the O'Brien mix until you see the pre-entries, because he's got so many he can choose from. For goodness sake, this Saturday, the final Group 1 race in the UK of the season is the Virtan Futurity, formerly the Racing Post Trophy. It's a mile race for 2-year-olds at Doncaster. There are 12 entries at the 5-day stage. Aidan O'Brien trains 11 of them. I mean, it's kind of awe-inspiring and slightly depressing at the same time. 11 out of 12 entries in a Group 1. So you see the sort of strength he's got, or the depth he's got anyway, in terms of horses that are capable of running at the elite level as long-running 2-year-olds. So, again, we just have to wait and see, because any number of those could be possible for the mile race.
Well, and yeah, I've got as a working list Arizona, Wichita, Royal Dornoch. Those are the three that.
Well, I mean, in that order, I mean, I'd say they'd probably be favored in that order. Arizona ran a fine race behind Vinatubo in the Dewhurst. The second horse you mentioned, Wichita, I don't think he handled the soft ground in the Dewhurst. He looked very good at Newmarket prior to that. Royal Dornock improved last time. I think they'll probably have to bring him because he's tough and he's pretty exposed, and you may as well, because where else are they going to go with him? As far as the fillies are concerned, of the non-Aidan O'Brien horses, I'm presuming and hoping that Daya is still the likeliest runner. I didn't think she handled the track very well at Newmarket last time, but she still got the job done. I was a bit more impressed with her when she was second in the Moy Blair in Ireland and second to the Mark Johnston filly in the Dutch of the Cambridge Stakes at Newmarket. So she'd still be the one that I'm interested in just because she's had this race as her target for so long.
Yeah, Love and Tango, Mark Johnston, Walk in Marrakesh, K.R. Burke, Living in the Past.
Well, she'll definitely come, Living in the Past, and she produced a decent performance to beat a good filly of John Quinn's in the Lowther, Liberty Beach, and she's been targeted at the race ever since, so she'll go there fresh enough, and she's got a bit of boot, we know that, but it's just a question of whether she can stretch a speed.
Well, we'll know what the pre-entries look like on Wednesday. We've got certain pieces of information that are kind of rolling in here as the morning goes on. And just hearing from Patrick Biancone, I was tracking Diamond Oops, who seems to be getting better and better. And Patrick has pre-entered Diamond Oops. For those of you that were curious, first choice is the sprint. Second choice is the dirt mile. So Breeders' Cup's always more fun with Patrick around.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And don't be bumming any cigarettes off him either.
You won't find me doing that nowadays, Steve.
Attaboy.
Yeah. Clean since May.
Well done. Yeah, I'm thrilled to hear that. And I've also been thrilled to be tuning in. You hinted when we talked, I don't know, maybe I guess it was a month ago or maybe it was two conversations ago.
I spoke to you at Keeneland just before. Yes. I recorded the last three episodes.
Well, talk about it and tell everybody, for those that didn't see the first couple of offerings, explain what you're doing and what else we're going to look forward to here in coming days.
Well, this is a little six-part series. They're about an hour long each of interviews, either solely as duets or trios, leading up to the Breeders' Cup. They're not handicapping shows. They're not even shows running through people's existing horses. They're stories about people's lives, their careers, their thoughts on the game, the way the sport is at the moment, the challenges facing the sport, things that we can look forward to, things that we're frustrated by, love, life, losses, all sorts. And I just tried to assemble as an interesting and eclectic a collection of people as I could who would have thoughts on all those things. Spanning a couple of weeks at Santa Anita and Keeneland. So obviously I was kind of hidebound by relatively last-minute availability and so forth, but I was pleased with the group of guests I had, and everyone gave their time very generously and very freely, and they seem to have gone down quite well so far. So if you have missed episodes 1 through 3, which were all the shows we filmed at Santa Anita, you can catch those on YouTube, Luck at the Cup, on YouTube or on all Breeders' Cup social media channels. Mike Smith talking about how the defeat of Zenyatta in the Breeders' Cup Classic prolonged his career because if she'd won, he'd have walked away with her. Richard Mandela talking very movingly about Beholder in episode 2. And in episode 3, the new Supremo at Santa Anita, Aidan Butler, talking about the challenges that he and the track are facing. You may feel you've heard enough about that already, but if you want a bit more, there's there. And really entertaining contribution from Flavian Bratt's agent Derek Lawson, and where I teased him mercilessly about his reaction to the announcement of the stewards' inquiry after the Kentucky Derby. And then right now, of course, you're missing it. It's on now live. The premiere of Graham Motion and Kathy Anderson is from Keeneland is on now on the Breeders' Cup social media channels. I'm not trying to divert you away from Steve Bick's excellent show, but it's there if you want to watch it and catch up later. And then tomorrow, Jerry Bailey, I'm get to sit down and chew the fat with my NBC colleague, Jerry Bailey, which was a lot of fun with Sophie Doyle. And on Thursday, because pre-entry's Wednesday, so we miss a day Wednesday, on Thursday, the final, and I think in many ways most interesting and absorbing issue of the series, so I will let you be the judge for yourself. 40 minutes with Kent DeZorbo.
Always entertaining. You hang on. You throw the switch and turn on the microphone, and you don't know what radio gold or TV gold might spill out.
Well, the only thing you can hope for as an interviewer, and you do this every single day, Steve, is that somebody somewhere in the course of time that you're on the air tells you something that you don't know already.
That's right. That's right.
And in the case of guys who've ridden between them, you know, somewhere north of 20,000 winners, you think, well, they've been asked just about every question there is to ask, and there really isn't much juice to squeeze out of this lemon. But fortunately, I feel that there was a little more there that came in Kent's case, and he seemed really up for it. So I really would urge you to watch them all, obviously, but particularly to see that one on Thursday.
I will send out the links. And what is your schedule? We will see you how soon at Clocker's Corner?
Well, I'm flying Sunday, and hopefully I will be there on Monday morning. Fingers crossed.
Excellent. Well, Nick, as always, invaluable time spent, and we'll send everybody to Luck at the Cup, the latest in the series of luck luck activities. Luck on Sunday, luck in the desert, luck at the cup.
I am aware that this is, you know, if someone has a kind of deep-seated and visceral dislike of me and all my work, then this is going to be a very painful period. But I will try and I will endeavor to scurry off somewhere after Breeders' Cup and sort of disappear into anonymity for a bit to give you a break.
No, there's no overexposing you.
Believe me, there are one or two. Yeah. Anyway, some of them may even listen to this show.
No, I can't believe it. Nick Luck, everybody. Nick, thanks so much. I'll see you on Monday.
Thank you, Steve.
It's unbelievable. It's so great. Doesn't matter. I can throw any name, any race, any incident, any occasion. It doesn't matter. He's one of a kind. I said this from day one. The first time I had him, which was at that actually, I think it was at Santa Anita, and it was after Kate Miller had left William Hill, and she'd been doing the international scene, and so needed somebody new, and Nick was presented, and the first time we had him on, and we went through the list of, it might have been the juveniles, and you know, the juvenile scene is usually pretty jumbled. It's not as if there's a established, that each one of them has run, a career's worth of races. And, you know, I've got the list in front of me, and he's got nothing. He doesn't have the names, and I'm going through the names, and he's, well, when this happened and this happened and got good experience here, and, you know, and is quoting virtually the careers of any horse that I brought up, and their season and specific. I was astounded because I can't do it. I cannot do it. Now, of course, I'm older than Nick, so maybe I can use a feeble use that as a feeble excuse. But you've got to have Andy Serling has this too. This photographic, I guess, is right, is the memory, or the institutional memory, I guess, that with every passing start that these horses have, it's retained. I've never seen anything like it, because I certainly can't do it. Let's take a break here. We've got Mike Welch in about 15 minutes, and John White, too. We'll get some of the the West Coast conversation in as well, and whatever else John's been staying busy with, and I'm sure that that's plenty. But the West Coast, maybe the West Coast runners, I will pick something out with John. We'll come up. I hadn't really thought about it. And we've got a couple of probably slip in. It's going to get tight, actually. We'll try to slip in a couple of trainer visits as well. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sarmon Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
3-8-4-6-4-3. Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Where's the dagger? Can't find the dagger. Lost the dagger. Ain't seen the dagger. Where's the dagger? Look for the dagger. Lost the dagger. Has anybody seen the dagger?
Well, I must have planted this in John in Casey's mind by mentioning John White. I guess that's what that. No John White yet. John will join us after Mike Welch. We got about 10 minutes. You know, I mentioned Bean Cone and Diamond Dupes because I am just fascinated by what has happened and what Patrick has done with the horse and. I brought it up because I've been tracking, you know, he turned up about, I don't know, a week ago, suddenly popped up on the radar for Breeders' Cup as either a sprint or a dirt mile participant. And Patrick has done some job with this horse. And I know people are going to look at the PPs. I mean, he got beat 3/4 of a length in the Shadwell Turf Mile. And was only what, beaten 3 lengths or so in the Vanderbilt by Imperial Inn. So he's going to go back to the dirt And here, I'm just trying to find. Yeah, there we go. I'm just pulling up the PPs, the charts. Here we go. Diamond, oops. And four-year-old looking at Lucky Gelding. Speaking of looking at Lucky Geldings, we've got our looking at Lucky Kid Chocolate running on Friday. Diamond Oops has just gotten better and better and better with racing. And Patrick, you know, started him out 5 furlongs as a 2-year-old. Won at First Asking, won a stake, second start, tried the Saratoga Special. Water was a little deep, then got a little freshening, came back, finished the year winning the Buffalo Man, and then, of course, missed a good portion of his 3-year-old season. Well, coming back as a more mature 4-year-old, he's been tremendous. Just tremendous. I don't know what to say. I mean, turf and dirt up until the Shadwell, where, you know, he came within a couple of jumps of winning a grade one on the turf, and he's been second in grade ones on the dirt and turf in his last two starts. A fascinating horse. And I imagine that Patrick will be, you know, very much a featured interview around Santa Anita next week. So look for Diamond Oops in your PPs, and feels like he's going to try the sprint. And given how much, you know, pace looks like is involved, he is one of the horses that is going to come from just off the pace. He's going to sit third, fourth, fifth early. And he's going to be a price. How is he not going to be a price? Imperial Hint, Matoli, Chancelot, Catalina Cruiser, Firenze Fire, Engage, Hog Creek Hustle. And I think it looks like Jack Sisterson's coming with Lexitonian. So add Diamond Oops to that group. And there's obviously Vicky Foley, too, with Hog Creek Hustle. Promises Fulfilled, not coming. And in fact, the Roman's horses shipped yesterday out of Churchill. We'll talk, in fact, just a minute or two. We got about 5 minutes, and Mike Welch will join us at the top of the hour. And we'll talk about the sprint in depth with Mike. It's his race. So we'll do workouts and more with Mike Welch in a couple of minutes. Neil Pessin is going to join us. I've been trying to get Neil. He'll join us as well. And if you know, we talk about, how often do we talk about food? There is no more respected gourmand in the industry, in the game, maybe, than Neil Pessin. I know people think, oh, I know where to eat, and not like Neil Pessin. Neil Pessin is the Columbo of, and the Inspector Perot and Magrette and any other detective you can come up with. Neil Pessin, he's got a compendium of the best restaurants in anywhere. He's your guy. He's your guy in New Orleans and anywhere else. So looking forward to a visit with Neil. And he's got to be still aglow over Bell's The One. Let me slip in, because I know what's going to happen as the week proceeds, especially once we get the pre-entries delivered on Wednesday. Let's get Remington done, and I'll run through this card with the classics. And there was a tale of two juveniles at the start and the beginning of that card on Friday night, and I fell asleep, and I had the computer going, and then we just started, you know, we were leaving the next morning to go to Far Hills. And so you couldn't stay up, you know, too late and missed a couple of interesting winners and prices, not the least of which was the last of the classics, Tim Martin sends out 94-1 Maiden Zap It. And It's My Lucky Day, bred by Circle Bar H, owned by Big Sugar Racing. It's your garden variety, second time starter that paid $190. 190.40. 39.40 to place, 20.60 to show. Huge balloons with all the wagers. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Kento Hill aboard for Martin and Big Sugar Racing out of the Bob and John Mayer Zuni Woman. And really, you know, it just, you know, second time starter, you just don't know. Had a 36 buyer, fourth in the debut against some of the same horses. Didn't really run that badly, to be honest, and in her debut. Earlier, though, of course, you also had Rowdy Yates at 1-5. The morning line colt, bred by Tracy Renee Strachan and owned by LNN, that made a couple of starts, of course, against, you know, serious horses in the Iroquois and at Ellis Park when he won the juvenile. And, of course, the Bashford Manor just missed there. So back with his own kind, and he was an easy winner on the front end under Richard Aremia for Steve Asmussen, of course. Get you a couple more before Mike joins us in the distaff. And I was annoyed. Tina was more annoyed than me because the winner of the distaff at 9-1 for Carl Broberg and GK Racing, Mike Castor's bred 6-year-old mare. He bred her and by Save Big Money out of a Devil Is Due mare in a good way. And that's something that Tina says all the time. And so when I said, oh, my God, look at this, she said, why didn't you tell me? And I really hadn't noticed. I mean, there was a even money favorite, Lady Orchid. And I just, you know, I was sort of watching, you know, not really betting at all. I had the PPs, though, in front of me. And if I had told her, she would have bet in a good way. Like, because whenever I say something to her, whenever she – on the rare occasions that my wife annoys me, I'll say something and she'll say, in a good way? And so I kicked myself that I didn't tell her that in a good way was in that distaff. In the distaff turf, Alternative Slew, the Alternation, 3-year-old, beats Elders, and did it well at even money for Randy Oberlander and Walter Jones, homebred out of his Evansville Slough mare, I'm a Dancing Slough. You had Welder, who is really, what a nice horse. This is Welder, the 6-year-old by the Visualizer. Ramax Farms and Teresa Liniak just keeps winning. What does this represent now? Let me see. Win number 20 in 30 starts is just, you know, way too much for state breds. This is a horse that, you know, won the David Vance, competed with Whitmore in the Hot Springs. I mean, it is a serious, really nice sprinter. Originally bred by Center Hill Farms, Center Hills Farm, for a nickel. That was one of Cabrera's three winners. Three cords in the sprint, the distaff sprint for Kenny Smith and Dreamwalkin. The 4-year-old And just from the rail, win number 7. The homebred by the great Euro Ears, old favorite of mine. Cowboy Mischief in the Turf Classic. The Into Mischief colt, Ken Nolan, sent out for owner Kelly Thiesing. Homebred out of another Bob and John mare, as it happens. Cowboy Mischief beats Elders with Aramia, and C.R. Trout with Cabrera. Shotgun Cowboy, wire to wire, and at 6-5. 6-5 was, frankly, a gift on Shotgun Cowboy. Actually been winless since last year's Classic. So win number 14 for him in 38 career starts. Just a 7-year-old has been just spectacular. He's this was, what, $175,000? So add $105,000 to his bank. He's over $1.5 million in earnings now. Shotgun Cowboy. Really good. We're going to reach for Mike Welch right now, exactly top of the hour. So let's do that case. We'll get Welch in here, and we'll talk about the Breeders' Cup Sprint, his race, and we'll get the review of the important works at Churchill. And no shortage. Mike going up Thursday to Churchill, and that included the opportunity to see Covfefe as well as Dennis's Moment. So a chance to see two of the favorites, Covfefe in the filly and mare sprint and Dennis's Moment, of course, in the juvenile. But in addition, Elate on Saturday, as well as Arklow and Mr. Money, Got Stormy, Owendale, and more. Some of the juvenile runners, juvenile turf runners, like Peace Achieved, for instance. I should mention, actually, in advance of Mike joining us, the postponement of Serengeti Empress's important final work. Feels like she's headed to the distaff, but Tom Amos with a appendicitis attack that saw him have to be operated on. So he wants to be there for the work. So they put off Serengeti Empress's effort. So we'll talk about all those with Welch and more. And here he is. Mike Welch, good morning. Unbelievable. 3-for-3 with the initial connection. I don't know. Case, what do you think? What's very strange. So give Casey a second to figure out where our man is. We'll get Welch in here. Of course, at Keeneland and at Belmont, plenty of works as well to discuss. And also a retirement that we'll mention. I saw it this morning. I hadn't seen it yesterday. But Flameaway, who got very popular with his daring style and plucky his plucky efforts, Flameaway, is going to go stand at Darby Dan. Matt Bowling put a deal together. And as a son of Scat Daddy, you got to figure it'd be well-received, Flameaway. So, you know, he was fun. Didn't really go forward, I think, the way that Mark Cassie had hoped and Jack Oxley, but, he certainly had his fans. Mike Welch joins us. Let's try this again. Mike, good morning. Case, I don't know. I'll leave this for you to figure out. Nothing more frustrating than that. So, yeah. See, it's funny. It's funny, Case, because I can. You're right. I can hear him in the background. I can hear the, you know, what sounds like the connected phone. Very weird. All right. going to call him back and establish a different line? I'll leave it to you. All right. And you know, it's interesting. I'm anxious as much as we're looking forward to talking to Mike about the works this weekend. The decisions of Catalina Cruiser joining the sprint and now looks like Diamond Oops as well. You know, the sprint just keeps getting more and more intriguing, even without Omaha Beach. And, you know, the horse, there we go. Now I can hear Mike. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. I don't know what the hell's going on. We've had trouble all morning. I'm just talking about the sprint. We're going to talk about the workouts, and there's plenty to discuss. However, the sprint, which is your race and always is, gets more and more interesting with every passing day.
Yeah, I mean, there's been changes here, changes there, who's in, who's out. Still not quite sure what the field's going to look like. I guess we'll know a little more when the free entries come out Wednesday. Who's given first preference, second preference to sprint and dirt mile. We do know no Omaha Beach. I know no promises fulfilled. Looks like Catalina Cruiser leading that direction now. And Whitmore's connection still on the fence whether to go or not.
I hadn't had a chance to text you, but I have been tracking with Patrick Biancone, and Diamond Oops will make the sprint his first choice and the dirt mile his second choice. So add him.
Okay. Well, that's a change since the last I'd heard. He had indicated it was going to be the other way around about a week ago. So that's actually news to me.
Well, anyway, we got to try to get the fingers on the pulses. And you know, Diamond Oops is a fascinating addition to the race. And when Patrick ran him in the Shadwell, I thought it was the craziest thing instead of the Phoenix, and you know, there's a big difference between running in races like the Jaipur and running in a race like the Shadwell Turf Mile. And I couldn't really understand it. But then when he ran such a bang-up race and only is overhauled by Bowie's Hero late, now he'll get the advantage of a turf-to-dirt turn back. And that race in the Vanderbilt, he wasn't going to beat Imperial Hint that day, but nobody who was going to.
Right, no, that's true. And, I mean, the one thing he will have going for him is his running style in a race
yes.
that figures to have a pretty lively pace. And it'll, you know, it still remains to be seen how the racetrack is going to play out Breeders' Cup weekend. You know, we sometimes see disturbing trends sometimes that, you know, really
yeah.
don't always let the best horse win. We saw it at Del Mar for sure. With the sprint a couple of years ago, actually the best horse probably did win anyway, but when Roy H. beat Imperial Hint, the track was decidedly off the pace and outside favoring that day. And it just remains to be seen what kind of track we'll get. But, you know, class-wise and numbers-wise, he's going to have to move way up, but he will have the advantage of probably the right running style for the race profile.
Talk about the known quantities in here, and you know, when Catalina Cruiser made that decision Saturday that Jay Privman brought the news forward. You know, some people thought, oh, he's trying to avoid Omaha Beach, and I laughed. I thought you're going to run him smack into Matoli, Imperial Hint, Chance a Lot. Not to mention Firenze Fire, Engage for Steve Asmussen, who is going to come in under the radar. And then, you know, from off the pace, we just brought up Diamond Oops. But Hog Creek Hustle has done nothing but run on late every time Vicky Foley has sent him postward. So the sprint is going to be as anticipated as it's been in years.
Yeah, no, it may be the best race on the card, that let alone the second, maybe behind the Classic. And can you imagine if Omaha Beach had gone in here, what
right.
it would have had top billing for certain, I think. But, you know, what can you say? I mean, Catalina Cruiser is 7-8. The only loss was last year, as we know, at Churchill Downs in the dirt mile. You know, I mean, he's certainly as good a sprinter as he is a miler. Maybe better, I guess, is what John Sadler's believing. And he, too, will have the benefit I think of the running style, because going six furlongs, you know he's going to be sitting off the pace, not on the lead, just as he was in the Pat O'Brien. Now, this field isn't the Pat O'Brien, but, you know, I mean, he's proven over the racetrack, and he's just a very, very good horse. Like you said, it is probably the best renewal of this race in quite some time.
Well, and it which is welcome, because it was such an important race, and you know, so many great moments in Breeders' Cup history. And then with the introduction of the Dirt Mile and all these other, you know, the other races that have shown up, including the Turf Sprint, when you think about, you know, what, for instance, a horse like World of Trouble that went in that direction, even though he just as easily could have competed in the six furlong Dirt Sprint last year. You know, you think about horses like that and you know, horses that have been lost out of the classic to go to the Dirt Mile, and sprinters that ended up leaning in that, you know, heading in that direction, 7/8 type sprinters. And, you know, the race that suffered most from it was the sprint. But this year, not so much. We're waiting. You mentioned.
I was just going to say, though, imagine what this race could have been like if XY Jet, World of Trouble, and Roy H had stayed healthy. Can you imagine that kind of, they might have broke a world record for sure as far as, the pace would have been just so incredible, and with that group in there, as long as along with what we know we've got, what a division this year.
Well, this will be fun, and we're waiting for a couple of decisions from, you know, some of the fringe players. Doug O'Neill told us Friday, Landeskog very well might enter. Jack Sisterson, certainly Calumet. And Brad Kelly loves to participate at all levels, and so Lexatonian could show up in here when they open the entries later today. We'll put this field together. We'll see the way it shapes up on Wednesday. Mike, let's talk about the horses that you watched. You jetted to Louisville on your way to California, and gave you the opportunity, you know, Friday through this morning to watch some works. Let's go to Friday, and two of the favorites, Covfefe and Dennis's Moment, and both kind of put on a show.
Yeah, both were worth the trip, that's for sure. Covfefe was the first horse I saw work. Of all the horses I saw work here, she was the first horse on the track Friday morning at 5:25. Brad Cox likes to get his big horses out early over that fresh track under the lights, and she was very, very good. Three quarters from the 5/8 and 12 at a couple, 59-3 to the wire. I had her home in around 23 flat, going easy, and she just continued out 7/8 and 25 at change. Couldn't ask for much more from her. You know, she just nudged a little bit on the gallop out there, asked to go around that turn because, you know, she finished the three quarters on the clubhouse turn and then galloped out all the way around the turn. Back to the backstretch there, so or almost back to the backstretch. So it was a great effort on her part, I thought.
Well, and Covfefe, I suppose just looking toward my, let me turn to my filly and mare sprint package. We did over the weekend lose Guarana out of the race. If you had not heard, Chad Brown a little just not happy with the way she's acted. And so they're going to put her away. And in fact, she's going to get a diagnostic and kind of fine tooth comb her to look forward to next year. But, you know, beyond Covfefe, who's going to be a clear favorite, Come Dancing for Carlos Martin, Spiced Perfection, Peter Miller, Sadler Waiting at Home with Selcourt, Jose Cameo with the Swift Minute to Stardom. You know, we'll add to the pace. I mean, it does feel like, you know, somebody is going to have to really jump forward. I mean, it feels to me, Mike, filly and mare sprint. We talked to Marty on Friday. She just feels really imposing if she runs her A race.
Covfefe, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. She's she couldn't be going in any better off of what I saw. It's the only time I've seen her, but. And she will work here again next week, although I'm sure she won't do quite what she did. This was her big work. And most I probably said that for all of the Brad Cox, the five I saw his over the weekend, that this was their major work, so they'll do something easier before they get on the plane next week.
Well, and we'll mention some of the others, and we'll talk about them like British Idiom in a minute. Let's talk about the juvenile favorite, and no matter what Dale Romans and Tammy Fox try to do, there's no slowing down the juvenile favorite.
No. Dennis's moment is the first time I've heard rave reports from about him from my colleague John Nichols here. But finally getting a chance to see him myself, and he was every bit as aggressive as John had said. He waited till 9 o'clock to come out. Tammy was aboard, 58-2, just showing out that speed, doing it easy, and then galloped out extremely well, 11-3, 25 and change. He couldn't be doing better either. And when I went back to see Dale after the work, he was almost shaking. He was so, I don't know if it's nerves. I don't know if it's just the whole thing. He said he doesn't know if it's the pressure or just that this horse just scares him. He's so talented. He called him the best horse he's ever had at this point in his career, and that's a pretty good statement because he's had some pretty good young horses at 2 and going forward to 3. So we'll see. He's still got to prove himself at the distance and with the better company, but he couldn't be going in any better off of what I saw the other day.
How, Tammy obviously is a natural lightweight on a horse as opposed to a jock, but rateable and in terms of how he'll approach the race. Any feel for how much how much influence he'll have over, over how he'll go once the gates open? Is he a horse that will come back?
I think Dale feels he will. The only caveat when Tammy does work these horses to Dale and they work fast.
Yeah.
Like you said, she weighs 90 pounds, and a lot of these horses is just with a light weight on their back. It'll be easier on them, obviously. Again, I was talking with John Nichols the other day, and he said it's almost more of an indication if one doesn't work well with her as opposed to when they do, you can tell a little bit more that way. But this horse did it so easily, and she was just sitting, just a passenger here. There's no doubt that talent level is there. But like you said, the post position, how the trip works out, can he rate? Will he get caught up early in a duel? There's a lot of questions still to be answered here, but I know that Dale wouldn't trade places with anybody going into this race.
No, and if you think about the Iroquois, he sat off a little. He sat off early enough in the Iroquois, but for those that haven't seen the way this field has come together, Dennis's moment. Baffert obviously waiting with 8 rings. Maxfield from Brendan Walsh. Eddie Keneally with Scabbard. American Theorem, George Papapodromo, also out on the West Coast waiting. Shoplifted's already out there for Asmussen and Wrecking Crew for Peter Miller and Storm the Court. Peter Urton, we're waiting for a couple of decisions. Big City Bob. And actually, I was, I saw Jorge Duarte at Far Hills on Saturday, and I didn't ask him about Big City Bob and what they were doing, but it's not a big field. At the top end, Mike, it's a nice group.
Yeah, no, it is a solid bunch, and Bob has that home court advantage, which he uses quite well out there. You got to make him a couple of points more favorite, I guess, when you're making the line, as far as when he's on the home court. So we'll see. Again, it'll be interesting to see how the race plays out from a strategy standpoint. And, young horses, some of them move forward quicker than others do from race to race. So that's something we'll have to see how that works out as well.
Well, we'll talk about some of the other Friday players in a minute, but I want to stick with the headliners for now, Mike, and let's talk about Saturday morning with Elate. And one of the intriguing storylines going into the Cup is Elate going the 10 furlongs in the Classic, and some thoughts about what we saw.
Well, you know, I saw her Friday morning here just galloping, and she really caught my eye just the way she galloped. So I was really looking forward to her coming out and breathing the next day. And I wasn't quite sure how far she was going to go. I'm not surprised, I guess, that she only won 3/8 her first work back. She just ran a couple of weeks ago. But it just the way she looked and the way she did it, she went 34 and change. You'd have thought she was going 36 and change. But she just gobbles up the ground, and then she galloped out in 47 in a couple and continued out almost a full 5/8, actually. So, I mean, she couldn't have made a better impression. I know she got beat the last time, and, you know, big upset, a little disappointing. But, you know, maybe she's sitting on an even a little better effort this time than she was in the Judd Mountain. We know she'll go 1.25 miles. So, you know, she's 3 for 3 there. So, you know, that's a big plus on her side. So I'm looking forward to it. I know one thing, she won't be 3 to 5 this time.
Well, and that's, you know, that's part of the intrigue with having her in this race. Another classic participant on Saturday, Owendale. And, you know, is going to come in as a secondary, you know, player in here, but Owendale's going to have his supporters, and Brad Cox, his confidence in Owendale hasn't wavered at any point all year.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, the workout didn't go quite as planned, and probably wound up being a little slower than Brad had hoped. He had a workmate who, for whatever reason, was supposed to take the lead and serve as a target, and Owendale was supposed to sit off and finish. But the workmate got a little bit, was a little bit quirky, and the rider on Owendale found himself in front right from the start. He kind of was waiting for his mate, so he went 13-3 the first 8. And then, you know, he had a walkie-talkie, as most of these, you know, big outfits, they use them all the time now to communicate with the riders, the trainers, as they're in the middle of the works, relaying the fractions and telling them to just slow down, speed up. And Brad just told the rider, just go on with it, don't wait anymore. And, you know, he really picked it up the last part. He went 47 the last half mile, you know, finished with plenty in reserve, galloped out strong, pulled away from Pioneer Spirit easily. Had him in 13-3 and then 26-4 for 7/8. So even though it didn't go quite as planned, Brad said he got what he wanted out of it. He came back in good order. So he was overall, he was pleased.
One thing people are going to, you know, for those that are sheep players, and one thing they're going to see, given the trip that he had in the Oklahoma Derby, he's going to have run a figure that is going to put him very much within reach of the major players in this race. And obviously he disappointed a little bit. He was 15-2 essentially in the Travers, and was a bit of a, you know, went into the Travers, Mike, as kind of a horse that, you know, had that kind of a wise guy feel going into Travers, and he didn't run badly, but he also didn't impact the race. What's your read on him in this spot?
You know, I mean, like you said, I think on paper and you know, taking on older horses for the first time, I mean, you have to put him in the second group, and he may not have his regular rider. Chances are he's not going to have his regular rider with Florent Giroux having been injured recently. So, I don't know if that'll make a big difference or not. He's going to need a little pace. 10 furlongs is a question. I mean, his one time trying it, he ran okay, but not his best race probably. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. He probably won't be one of my top three choices, but, you know, he seems to be going into the race well.
Well, some horses that you also saw on Saturday and undoubtedly got Stormy is going to be a major factor in the mile. Kind of cruising into this, it seems. Her fitness, I wouldn't imagine, is at issue, but got Stormy Saturday, Arklow for the turf as well, and Mr. Money, who...
Yeah, well, Mr. Money, you know, I mean, I saw him Derby week here, and he was one of our A-minus works for the Clocker Report on the undercard on Derby Day, who ran an A-plus race, and he's just a superior turf horse, workhorse,
And, you know, he didn't disappoint again Saturday morning. He worked fast, and his gallop out is the best part of his works, and he did what he always does. You know, he looked just like the same horse I saw, just about the same horse I saw back before Derby Day. So he's doing his thing fine. Got Stormy, you know, I think it's just probably a little bit better workhorse on the turf maybe than on the dirt. The work was okay the other day, nothing spectacular. But again, you have to take into consideration, you know, she's a turf specialist and she was working on the dirt. So sometimes it's hard to get a read when you get that kind of a situation.
Well, Arklow, and you said the five, there's five that Brad Cox, the biggest contingent that he'll have sent to a Breeders' Cup, because Arklow joins Covfefe, Owendale, British Idiom. And certainly she's a player, and Andesite, we should throw in as well, who I think worked Friday.
Yeah, he did. Arklow, you know, again, turf on the dirt, probably a little quicker move than normal for him, and Brad was very, very pleased with what he saw from Arklow. He put him in company. He says he always works him in company to motivate him a little bit, but he seemed more pleased almost with Arklow's work than even that we had discussed the Owendale, just because that work didn't work out quite the same. But he was very happy with Arklow. And obviously he's coming off, the biggest effort of his career, winning the Joe Hirsch. So we know he's doing well. And again, turf horse working on the dirt, but working well, that's a good sign.
You mentioned Whitmore. We're going to have to wait. It feels like they're on the fence about Whitmore's participation in the sprint. Who else? Peace Achieved worked as well, you saw. And who else are we missing from the weekend?
Well, this morning, I mean, the one horse we didn't get to see was Serengeti Empress, unfortunately.
Right.
Because trainer Tom Amos was stricken with appendicitis the night before she was scheduled to work. He has postponed the work. I was hoping she would come out today. I thought he worked a couple of horses earlier this morning, right after the track opened from 5:30 to 6:30. He worked three horses, but she was not one of them. So I'm not sure what exactly his plan with her. But I did get to see Street Band coming off. This is her second work since the Cotillion. And she looked good today. She had a slow work last time. I wasn't here for that, but obviously was asked to pick it up today. And, she did that, and as much, I'm sure, I didn't talk to Larry Jones, but she started off a little slow, came her last half in 47 and won, went 59 and 3 for 5/8, and then galloped out nicely, 13 and 2, 27 and 1. It was the bullet of 18 5 furlong works today. It was a fairly busy morning with rain coming in tomorrow and maybe going to put a damper on workouts tomorrow, maybe for a couple of days. But, she looked good. She's obviously in peak form right now. She's going to need some pace help up, in her race. But I'm sure Larry was quite pleased with the effort today.
Well, there's plenty of pace. There's plenty of pace for her to anticipate in the distaff.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, that's what she needs, and she's going in well. So that's a couple of big pluses on her side.
I was going to ask you about Mr. Freeze, but Mr. Freeze is not going to enter, as it turns out. I'm just hearing that from Dale Romans. So no Mr.
Yeah,
Freeze.
Not surprised there. I could tell he was kind of leaning against, and he also, let me know that Promises Fulfilled was out and probably done for the year too, but we'll be back next year.
Well, Mike Welsh will be back next week when we're together at Clocker's Corner, and the DRF inside post action, whether it's everybody's Twitter account or DRF Live. Mike, lay out the coverage, some videos as well, I suppose, you're going to be taping?
Yeah, I'm going to start Wednesday with the videos. I'm supposed to fly to Santa Anita later this afternoon, although the weather here is not very positive the next few hours, so I'm hoping I can get out today. If not, I'll have to wait till tomorrow. But I think we'll start the videos on Wednesday. I did want to mention, as far as our Clocker staff and our Clocker coverage, we had Clockers over the weekend at the Keeneland, Churchill,
We had two at Belmont, and we had Toby at Toby Terrell at Santa Anita. I'll join him at Santa Anita, but that's why I came here. I wanted to get some, you know, some coverage of these Churchill works as well. Some of them we'll see twice, late being one of them. But some of these others we would not have seen if I didn't get it come over here. Donald Harris has Keeneland covered, and back in New York, got Mike Vesey and Dave Grenning, of course, on the scene. So this will be our biggest and best coverage ever for the Breeders' Cup, with so much coverage around the country leading up to the races.
And out of curiosity, the report itself, both days, will they both come out Thursday afternoon or one day?
I'm hoping we can get the Friday one out Wednesday and the Saturday one out Thursday.
Nice.
That's the plan right now. I mean, it's a lot of data that's got to be entered into the system, and that's the hardest part. Clocking them is the easiest part. Entering the data into our system and getting it, putting these reports together is the is really the most work for the whole gang of us. So, that's our goal, and I think we did it last year. I think we had the Friday card out Wednesday and the Saturday card out Thursday. I think we did that this year for the Derby too. I think we had the Oaks Day card Wednesday and the Derby card late Thursday afternoon.
Excellent. Well, you're not going to want to approach Cup without it. Mike, thanks so much. Safe travels. I hope you don't get delayed and marooned.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm not sure what the schedule is tomorrow at Santa Anita. From what I understand, the track there has been closed on Tuesdays for training, but they will open tomorrow from Breeders' Cup horses only, and I'm not sure if there's any work scheduled. But if I do not make it there, they do have Toby Terrell there, and Jay Pribman likely would be there, so we'll have plenty of coverage regardless.
Mike Welsh, everybody, DRF Welsh, and the clocking team from coast to coast. Mike, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
We'll see you out there. Mike Welsh, everybody. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, and Neil Pessin is going to join us. We'll talk about the terrific performance, Bell's the One, the filly takes the Raven Run. Nice win for Neil and for Mr. Lothenbach. Back after this, Neil Pessin.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait. With 14 challenging Breeders' Cup races, 5 Friday, November 1st and 9 Saturday, November 2nd, you've got to be ready. Kickstart your handicapping mojo with ExpressBet's free Breeders' Cup wager guide. Available online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, October 25th. Get analysis, selections, price plays, and $100 wagering strategies for every Breeders' Cup race from expert handicappers and broadcasters. Plus, oodles of informative stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. XBTV's Jeff Siegel, At the Races radio host Steve Bick, NBC Sports analyst Nick Luck, and multiple Eclipse Award winner Dick Girardi anchor a powerful team of guide experts. NBC Sports analyst Eddie Olchek and retired sportscaster Brent Musburger of VSiN will contribute to a revised guide version available beginning Thursday, October 31st. Go to ExpressBet.com now. Open an account, get the free guide, and play Breeders' Cup.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 388-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And